Welcome to the Potty Slam. My name is O'Leary Sampson. Okay, that was a long ways to go for a bad joke, but
no, I liked it.
We are a wrestling historical podcast where we talk about the locker room and beyond. And this story I am bringing to you is well beyond a locker room.
Those are usually pretty good.
So, on October 4th, 1975, a twin-engine Cessna 310 plane took off from Charlotte for Wilmington, North Carolina. Now, as they approached the Wilmington Airport runway, the plane ran out of gas and skipped across several treetops before hitting a utility pole and crashing into the ground. And with that, the lives of promoter David Crockett and wrestlers Tim Woods, Bobby Bruggers, then U.S. heavyweight champion Johnny Valentine, and a 24-year-old upstart by the name of Ric Flair, their lives were changed forever, and even their wrestling careers. Now, it is remembered as the most historical plane crash in wrestling lore. It was the talk of the industry for years. The landscape of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, the cornerstone of the NWA, which was the largest promotion at the time, was forever changed. Two careers were ended, and the one of Ric Flair's almost never had one because of this plane crash.
Mm-hmm.
Crockett remembers the terror and fear that overcame him as the plane started to nosedive. Quote,
"At the time, I was scared to death. I just remembered as we started going across Cape Fear River."
That's a good name.
"The engine started to fail. I remember leaning over trying to control my breathing. My wife had our first child 2 weeks before.
Oh.
So I was trying to do Lamaze so I couldn't get the wind knocked out of me and pass out. Because I knew if I passed out, I'd be deader than a doornail. I remember thinking, I've got all these wrestlers in front of me. If we crash in the water, I'll never get past them and get out. There'd be no way."
I mean, saying if these 260-70-pound men are dead,
yeah,
how's he going to move them out of the way?
Right.
Tim Woods, who wrestled under a mask at the time as the original Mr. Wrestling, clever name, remembered a conversation he had with Austin Idol, who himself had survived a plane crash himself a few years earlier.
"Austin Idol did not have his shoes on in the plane," recalls Woods, "and it tore the bottoms of his feet down to the bone."
Ooh, ow.
"And he never wrestled again."
See, that's the true story of Flintstones drivers. They don't tell you that.
No, they don't.
Fred
was a masochist. He just had two stumps.
"I'm going to hit the highway, barn. I'm going to hit it." "Oh, okay, Fred." Skipping my bones off the freeway.
Nothing left but a trail of pebbles.
Nah. Nice.
So he talks about how the bottom of his feet were torn up about Austin Idol's, and
"that was the first thing that went through my mind," he says. "I didn't have my shoes on either. The pilot had a big briefcase with some airplane manuals in it."
Okay.
Let me reach back here. I forgot how to land this, how to fill it up with gas.
What I don't understand in this story is, like, they took off and they ran out of gas. So
right as they're approaching the runway. The manuals were in the briefcase, in all fairness.
Oh, okay.
There wasn't that little triangle that points to which side the fuel tank is on.
You would think there would be a little light that pops on with, like, a gas tank next to it.
We'll get there.
"So the pilot had a big old briefcase with some airplane manuals in it. I grabbed that and put it under my feet because I didn't have time to get my shoes on. I knew we were going down. There was no question of that. We just dropped like a rock. The controls leveled the plane out, and that was about it. I knew that I wasn't going to die."
That's a good one right there.
Yeah, wasn't it?
That was a monster.
Truly.
I just remember, it was just a matter of how badly we would be injured.
Even though he knew they were going to crash, Johnny Valentine believed he would come out unscathed.
"All the time we were going down, he said he knew he wasn't going to be hurt,"
said Valentine's wife, Sharon.
"He said he felt like he was indestructible. He said they were in trouble, but he was going to be all right. He kept telling himself that."
Well, that crash came about as a result of human error. The pilot, Vietnam veteran Joseph Michael Farkas,
Mr. Farkas.
Farkas.
Farkas got his dick caught in the toaster again.
I got a platinum and flying planes.
Oh, Farkas.
He silly Farketh you.
First of all, he had trouble getting the plane off the ground in Charlotte because of the bulk of the wrestlers.
Oh, yeah.
Figure they weigh like a human and a half each.
Right.
Now, it's just a small little charter plane?
It's a Cessna.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
My brother-in-law flies those.
He did not distribute the weight of the passengers in the plane properly and decided to dump fuel from the gas tank to lighten the load.
Oh, my God.
Genius.
Although, I mean, I understand it's a quick flight. So you almost think he could make it there pretty easily,
yeah. But
he must have hit the button and just started humming a song and forgot that he was...
The manuals were in a briefcase. He didn't look at that. Valentine was the first to notice that the plane had run out of the gas. Let me repeat that. A wrestler was the first, not the pilot, not the co-pilot.
The pilot was too busy kicking his feet up, just chilling out, relaxing.
John got to looking over at the gauge and said, "Gee, we're out of gas." And the pilot said, "Don't worry about that. My wing tanks are full." When they started sputtering and spinning, the pilot panicked and started screaming.
Never a good sign, right?
No.
We're going down.
He went full Farkas.
He did.
John reached over and slapped the pilot to try to bring him to.
And knocked him out.
Bitch, wake up!
Had the guy not panicked, they could have actually landed safely. It was a beautiful day. There weren't any headwinds or rough air. He dumped fuel, recounted Crockett. The plane was overweight. Luckily for me, because I probably would not be here today, is that I should have been sitting where Johnny Valentine was sitting because of the weight factor.
I didn't know planes would do that, but especially on a runway, I'm just picturing like a giant like plane looking like rolling along, and all of a sudden it just like diarrhea shits out a bunch of fuel onto the just like. And I mean, that can't be good with a bunch of planes landing in like taxi.
There's the guy with the cone, the glowing cone.
I've been airplane
smoking a cigarette because it's the 70s. Boom.
Dracarys.
And like a look at cartoon. He blinks twice, and his eyebrows and eyelashes all fall off in one.
It's a bad day to be the cone boy.
No kidding.
As the plane began to drop, several thoughts raced through Crockett's mind.
I kept on wondering why we were trying to get to Wilmington, why we couldn't we land someplace like Fayetteville or Florence, instead of still trying to go all the way to Wilmington. There was this luggage compartment behind me, and I sort of remembered that the plane had this plastic bubble back there. I was scared enough and thought, if I survive hitting the water, I'll bust through the luggage door somehow. At some point, when I was leaning forward, praying hard, I thought I saw a light and heard a buzzer going off, continued Crockett. This crash was after the Eastern Airlines crash here in Charlotte, where they just flew the plane right into the ground, and the FAA were talking about installing devices on planes that they were flying too close to the ground and let the pilot know. I was thinking maybe that buzzer was it. That's the last thing I remember.
I forgot to ask when this crash happened, but mm-hmm. you said Ric Flair was 24, so I'm mm-hmm. imagining this is right around
1975.
Close enough.
Before I was born. Thank you, April.
I didn't say a thing. You said it, not me.
You were thinking it.
We crashed about 100 yards short of the runway. We just missed a water tower from the prison camp, which is there at the end of the runway.
That should not be that close to an airport.
No.
Oh, don't mind me. I'm just a cone guy. Oh, you guys need an extra bag? Oh, I'm a stewardess now. Anybody need a Diet Coke?
You think it's okay if we put a prison camp and a water tower right next to the airport? I think it's a good idea.
Sure.
The pilot stalled it and hit a tree, and luckily we didn't flip and turn upside down. We hit another tree and bounced off and nosedived into a railroad embankment.
Oh,
if we had gotten past the trees, we would have made the clearing right before the runway.
But we were stopped by the dynamite factory.
Unfortunately, didn't put any pillow factories there.
Self-landing.
When we finally hit the ground, the pilot then stalled the plane.
So it was still running when they hit.
Oh, Jesus. There's your wing fuel.
And this is Woods, Mr. Wrestling.
By doing that, he got our speed down as low as possible. We were still between 85 and 100 miles an hour when we hit the ground.
That's
But we didn't slide that far. That was a real jolt.
I bet.
We kind of came down and it spanked us. That's where we had the back injuries. It threw everybody forward.
And to this day, Crockett's memories of the crash are foggy. He has relied on the recollections of his wife, Wendy, and the other passengers to fill in the gaps in his memory. Crockett says, from talking to Valentine, he was conscious the whole time.
Be glad that you don't remember. All the seats except mine broke loose and went forward.
Oh, jeez. Oh, so they were thrown around like a bunch of change in a steel tube.
Very big change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's probably because Crockett's a smaller dude that he didn't break the chairs there.
I'm guessing Ric Flair was using the shitter. He's just like, woo! What's going on? Woo!
He tried to start the plane up by helicopter, helicopter, helicopter. Keeping it up there in the air. Contrary to media reports at the time, none of the six passengers were thrown from the plane. Wood says all six passengers were pinned inside, struggling to survive.
Just imagine all wrestlers with their heads buried in their ass of the person.
Human centipede.
I think I was the only guy who didn't get knocked out.
Wow.
I was sitting right behind the pilot. All the seats broke loose. What happened was our forward motion took all the seats up in such a way that they were cascading one on top of the other.
Jesus.
Don't want to be on the bottom of that pile.
No.
David was immediately behind me. It wasn't long. The rescue squad was there and took everybody out through the back baggage compartment door out the back of the plane.
So it's actually very fortunate they crashed right next to that runway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All six were admitted to New Hanover County Hospital in Wilmington. All of them suffered a litany of serious injuries. After 2 months of fighting for his life, the pilot died in the hospital.
Jeez.
He told a farkas.
He was 28. Really? He's dead, man. Too soon.
30 or almost 40 years ago. Or over 40.
More than 40 years ago. Let's not forget. This was before Larry was born.
Jeez. Crockett, who felt the effects of the crash for 6 months after it happened, suffered trauma to his head and sustained other injuries.
They stitched me up in my mouth, and I didn't realize that I had dislocated my shoulder. They tried to give me crutches to walk out of the hospital, but my right arm just wasn't working, so they checked that and found out I had also dislocated it.
Ugh, ow.
I was always complaining that whenever they put water or anything in my mouth, I would scream bloody murder. When my wife got me back to Charlotte.
When my MILF got me back.
I went full Ryan there. When my wife got me back.
I used to have a MILF.
Yeah, but then you got a divorce.
Oh! Inside Baseball, the EFIS podcast. Check it out.
Mm-hmm. I would scream like, that's.
When my wife got me back to Charlotte, I was still complaining about it. I didn't want to eat or drink or anything because it was hurting. She took me to our dentist, and he looked inside, and he said, well, I can understand that. He shattered two teeth, and the nerves are just sitting there exposed.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Take a deep breath out there, audience.
Ironically, David wasn't even supposed to be on the plane.
I wasn't supposed to be flying that day. My brother Jimmy was. He called up and said he was feeling really bad with the flu. This was a Sunday event in Wilmington, so I said I'd go because it was only a 45-minute plane ride.
Both Bruggers and Valentine sustained broken backs.
Jeez.
Ow.
After spending 10 days in the Wilmington hospital, they were flown by charter plane. No, thank you.
Drive me.
To a hospital in Houston where they underwent back surgery. A steel rod was later inserted into Brugger's spinal column, and he was released from the hospital 3 weeks later. Although he could have continued his career, he never wrestled again.
Jeez.
Crockett's head crashed through the seat in front of him, cracking and bruising Tim Wood's ribs.
Holy smokes! Oh, so he went forward and pushed
through
into the
chair.
Through the chair.
And breaking the ribs of the other guy. I'm surprised he didn't hurt his neck with that.
No kidding.
So, yeah.
He also suffered a concussion and a slight compression fracture in his back and was the first to be released from the hospital the next day.
Wow.
I wanted to get out of there just as quickly as possible, as quickly as I could,
commented Woods on his quick exit.
My wife was going crazy. We had two small children at home, and she didn't know what to think.
Yeah, well, I got my head pushed through a goddamn chair, woman.
But these two kids, I can't watch me shows.
One is...
No bitterness
one,
there.
Right? One won't stop talking about Minecraft, and the other one is pooping and grabbing the cat's fur.
Real life.
Oh, yep. Man, even more real life there.
Yeah.
I was insistent on getting up and keeping moving. I got up and literally I had to have a person under each arm to get me to a commercial airline plane out of Wilmington to fly back to Charlotte. So
Question. Sorry.
Yes.
If you were ever in an accident like that, how into the idea of flying would you be after that? Because I mean, I think that changes your whole. Like I've been in one car accident, and even to this day, and this happened when I was like 17. But just the way it happened, it fucking happens. Fast.
Yeah, it does.
And it changes your perspective on driving because, like, some people can text and drive. Mm-hmm. I can't do it.
No.
Like, it's fucking crazy.
You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
You assholes.
I'm just saying, sometimes I try.
Living on the edge.
I'll be right back.
So I got in the plane, and the plane landed in Charlotte. And don't you know, the brakes failed when we were on the end of the runway. This
Seriously?
Is the next day, and I'm thinking, holy cow, what's going to happen next?
It's like real life Final Destination.
No shit.
If I was him, I'd be like, fuck planes, fuck planes, fuck mm-hmm. planes.
It was Johnny Valentine who suffered the worst fate. Having broken his back. Now, mind you, he's the champion, the American, he's a pretty big deal at this point. He's holding a championship. Having broken his back in the crash, a bone fracture wedged itself into his spinal column. Forcing his back to be reattached with a clamp. Valentine was paralyzed for life.
Yeah.
His career came to a tragic end, and he never wrestled again.
Wow.
And he was the U.S. heavyweight champion, a top star for Jim Crockett Promotions, and was scheduled to face the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Dory Funk Jr., the following week. Considered one of the best workers in the country at the time, Valentine's injuries and forced retirement was a devastating loss to the wrestling community.
Oh, he loved it so much.
Ironically,
Valentine's Day.
Boy. Ironically, had it not been for a simple twist of fate, it could have been Ric Flair's career that ended it, not Valentine's.
Jeez.
I talked to Johnny Valentine about the crash, and Johnny was next to the pilot. He was up front in the plane,
informed Mike Moneyham, who is a reporter and columnist with the Charleston Post and Courier. Moneyham is among the top wrestling historians in the United States.
Flair was supposed to have been in Valentine's seat. Damn. He originally was in that
picture of Johnny Valentine.
Oh.
Kind of looks like one of those Hollywood golden boys.
Yeah.
He could have been Rocky in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Hey. Hey, you guys. Don't ride on planes. Just kidding. Good job, Johnny.
Flair was supposed to have been in Valentine's seat. He originally was in the seat next to the pilot, but Johnny said he was kind of scared to be up there. He said Flair kept whining until Johnny said, "You get in the back. I'll sit up here in the front."
So that would have been Flair who broke his back, maybe.
Crazy.
Fate was kind to Ric Flair. Had he not been in the front seat, it's possible that his career would have never started. They originally told him he probably wouldn't wrestle again because he had broken his back in three places. That's Ric Flair. Mm-hmm. Which is why when you watch him wrestle, he bumps on his hip.
Yeah.
And not his back. And they said the recovery time was probably going to be a year at the minimum. But he beat the odds and is still going today. He was remarkably resilient. This interview was a while ago because Ric Flair's in the hospital
right. As
we do this. He bounced right back. Doctors were fairly negative in the beginning. He always knew he was going to be back, and it was just another injury to overcome. As a matter of fact, he ended up returning to the ring in February of 76.
Whoa.
So, but you got to remember, there was a show that night still, and Crockett was the one who was running the show.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got to tell the paying audience something, because four of the stars that were advertised to be there are now in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a first-hand account by Sean Hudson, who was at the arena at the time.
I was in Legion Stadium the night the plane crashed. I wish I could remember it all, but I'm not as young as I used to be. The original card was to have been a double main event. Tim Woods versus Johnny Valentine.
So there's two of your guys right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
with Woods avenging his broken leg at the hands of Valentine. So it was like a pretty big a feud going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And Ric Flair was supposed to go up against Wahoo McDaniel, which was a feud that was just getting started.
This was maybe my second or third live event. The one in Wilmington preceded this was Paul Jones versus Valentine, and on the undercard was Ric Flair versus Ken Patera. That's how I remember both feuds were just getting started. The stadium was full, and the ring announcer came out just after I'd heard the rumor that there had been a crash. The show didn't start late. The ring announcer was keeping kayfabe and said that there was a plane crash and Valentine and Flair were injured. He then went on to say Tim Woods was lost and couldn't make it to the stadium on time.
This is back when you,
yeah, you, could
you couldn't tell right. them they were all on the plane together. It wouldn't make sense.
Yep.
That was it. They you know, that they tried to maintain kayfabe by
wow, jeez,
lying to the crowd. As a matter of fact, Tim Woods, even in his condition, they put him on TV like the next day.
Wow. Wow.
Just kind of propped him up in front of him, the camera, and just had him, you know,
mm-hmm. so just, that he made, he's just like,
hey, I'll be at the next event. You watch out, Spider Snake.
And like a tooth just pops out of his mouth.
Now, mind you, he's got bruised ribs too. So he's like, hey.
I got your number, Mama Bass.
Just mixing names.
So there you go. If you, I'm sure most people knew about Ric Flair's plane accident, but
not to that detail.
Yeah, wow, yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I like details. Just like I like the details that we cover on a Conspiracy Therapy podcast.
Bam. Wow. Excellent segue.
Well, I knew where we were going.
Yeah.
Well, I like Conspiracy Therapy podcast because the people that are on there also do the Stiff Joystick podcast. Hmm. You can find that on Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
And I like Stiff Joystick podcast and the Conspiracy Therapy podcast because all the people that are on those podcasts are on the Potty Slam podcast.
No shit.
Yeah, which you can find on Facebook and Twitter and Podomatic.
Lies.
And I love the sound of my own voice, which you can also find on the EFIS podcast, EFISpodcast.net. You can catch that. You can catch the Bud Miles Show. All these shows on the Beer City Media Network.
Like, share, listen to all the shows, because you never know. You might mm-hmm. actually find that you like the other programs.
You guys,
if you're a big fan of one, you might like the others.
You guys, do you mind flying?
Oh, that's a good question, because I think I brought this up before. I am actually pretty terrified of flying.
Mm.
I don't mind takeoff, and I don't mind landings, because I know that that's, of all things, is what most commercial pilots are super trained on.
Mm-hmm. Unless their manuals are in the back of the briefcase.
That's, yeah. I can understand that, the way that went, because that's kind of a weird scenario, but like commercial pilots are usually like they've done like 7 flights already that day. They're running on 14 hours. They're always, they're in constant autopilot mode. And that's really where I get creeped out, is when you're in the sky and there's so many variables.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on tons of flights, especially being in the Navy and going to like far, far away lands. And like every single time, there was always like there was at least one or two white knuckle flights a year for me being in that job. And now being a traveler, like I love traveling. So
mm-hmm.
what you need to do.
The only time I think I've ever been on a plane was when we lived in Alaska on one of the islands, and I'm pretty sure that it was, we arrived there and left by plane, but mm-hmm. I was 5 years old, so I don't remember it. I know I would not be a big fan of it because of my terrible fear of heights. So
we go to the mall, and mm-hmm. you know how there's like at Rivertown, and there's that like cutout area where you're on the second floor and you can like look down to the yeah. first floor. He can't even come within like 5 feet of
wow.
that railing.
So you probably couldn't deal with
do a window seat.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's a building in New York where you stand on this platform and then it does this.
Yeah.
It's glass and it just
you could not pay me.
He would poop his pants.
You could not pay me enough to do that.
Yep.
I mean, you could actually hold out $1 million and I would not take it. Because no.
Damn it.
If I were to get on a plane, I would have to be quite intoxicated.
Okay. That'd be fun for the other passengers.
Yeah, right. I really don't mind it. I think I'm kind of the opposite of Ryan. Once takeoff is done and we're just like smooth sailing, I'm like, I kind of forget where I am. That it just kind of feels like you're on a bus.
Yeah. Without the smelly people.
Well, there's still some smelly people. Right. There's like that weird recycled plane air smell.
Yeah.
That's kind of gross.
Farts.
Yep. But yeah, like takeoff and landing are where I kind of white knuckle, but I'm not really, it's not something that scares me.
If I'm hungover though, oddly enough, I usually pass out. That's like end of the trip type flying back from say Mexico or whatever. Then I'm just like, we hit some turbulence. I'm like,
what?
I'm like April. The takeoffs and landing, I'm a little sketchy on them. But when you're in the air, even when there's turbulence, it's like,
meh.
Yeah, you just, I mean, I've had one where we like where everybody went, whoa, like all at the same time because we dropped so hard. But.
Jeez.
And there was that old lady on that flight who did the same thing, who was like,
yes.
I like it when my skirt flies up a bit.
The vibrations remind me of my younger days. So we gotta fly this podcast on out of here until next week.
Hey yo.
Spin the potty slam.
This has been a presentation of Beer City Media.